This is Greg Olson, here to tell you about my new podcast, TE1. On the show, I had a chance to talk to my fellow tight ends who have revolutionized the position from an extra lineman to a dual threat superstar. And just like my guests have changed the game, this year, NFLSundayTicket.tv is revolutionizing your NFL viewing experience. Stream all the live out-of-market NFL games every Sunday on your favorite devices and never miss a moment from your favorite players. Visit NFLSundayTicket.tv and use the promo code GREG88 at checkout and get 15% off your subscription. That's NFLSundayTicket.tv and the promo code GREG88. Subscribe to TE1 and get NFLSundayTicket.tv, an unmatched dual threat.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
Joining me on the podcast now is Brad Rowland. He is a host of the Talking Chop podcast, part of SB Nation. You can check him out on Twitter at BT Rowland. Brad, thanks for joining me to talk some Braves.
It is my pleasure. Thanks for having me, and always we'll talk about some baseball.
Yeah, how have you felt about this season so far?
It's been very weird, as I'm sure everyone would tell you. You know, the Braves are playing pretty well, which makes it a little bit easier. This is a pretty good baseball team. But aside from that, just the day-to-day bizarre nature, like spending time on podcasts talking about games that may or may not happen and the logistics around the league. And it's just a very strange time to cover baseball. You know, fingers crossed that they continue to play and everybody's all right. But yeah, just a bizarre time, even if the team is pretty good. And it should be more fun than it probably is right now.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of, if for each, you know, the Yankees were off to a hot start and it's always like, well, now there's danger of it getting shut down and the Cardinals are still shut down. I don't know how the hell they're going to make up 14 games or whatever. Yep. It's going to be. And obviously the Marlins, which affects the Braves closely, affected the Yankees because they're all playing them in interleague play. So yeah, you're right. It's sort of like you can get excited and then you turn on the news and you realize, oh crap.
Yeah, it's very... I don't know. I cover basketball too, and basketball is playing, but I also cover the Atlanta Hawks who are not in the bubble that basketball is doing. So I'm in this weird spot where I cover one team that's not playing and I cover another team that is playing, but in a bizarre state. So every day I just feel like I have to qualify every statement. It's just a bizarre time.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure, you know, as most people feel, 60 games is not ideal for baseball, but are you one of these people that just thinks this is going to be a season that doesn't count because it's not a full season and weird stuff's happening, they're doing funky rules and expanded playoffs, or are you kind of intrigued by all this different stuff that they're trying out?
I'm closer to intrigued. I definitely understand the pushback because baseball is such a marathon sport and this is not really what this is going to be. But and for one example of that, like I hate the idea of expanded playoffs under normal circumstances, but this year I'm more okay with it because that way at least the better teams you hope would get into the playoffs, and then in a full-sized playoff scenario you would hope the better teams rise to the top. And yeah, I mean, it's not a normal season, but I do think that the asterisk talk is probably a little bit overblown for me. I think it almost might depend on who wins the championship this year, who wins the World Series, as to how people are going to react. If like the Yankees win or the Dodgers win, no one's going to really pile on them. But if it's a team that has lower expectations, maybe people will try to devalue it by saying it doesn't really mean anything. I don't know. I think it's definitely strange and should be talked about as such. But given the playoffs are a normal size, like you have to win a certain amount of series and full series, I think that
more
probably
series.
Helps things.
More series.
Yeah, actually, that's right.
You got to get through an extra series, a three-game series. And for a team like the Braves, team like the Yankees, it looks like they're going to be near the top of their division. So likely those are going to be at home. But it's still, who the hell knows what's going to happen in three games? Anything can happen.
Yeah, it's still quite a test. I mean, it's not normal, but it's not a situation where I'm just going to, you know, cross this season off as if it didn't matter. I think it does matter. How much it matters probably depends on the eye, I guess the eye of the beholder here.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm with you. I'm intrigued by a lot of this stuff because as much of a baseball fan as I am, I do think that they should and can do some things to make it a little bit more exciting on a normal basis over 162. And so if we're going to get a little bit of a taste of that this season, then I think it's a good thing. It's going to be weird anyway. So let's go full weird, I guess, for 2020. But The Braves, that, like you said, off to a good start, not in first place because the Marlins have a better win percentage, but I don't expect that to last. And if you could just sort of give people, because the Braves are not a team that Yankees fans really have seen much of, they're in the other league, so you may have just followed them from afar, but they've sort of turned things around pretty quickly in Atlanta. Give a little crash course on how they were able to do that and really have a young, good roster right now.
Yeah, I mean, there were some lean years. Like, they, you know, the Braves didn't necessarily do a full scale like Astros level rebuild where they were just absolutely terrible. Like, they were bad though for a while. I mean, I believe it was, yeah, four straight seasons where they missed the playoffs. The first of which was a disappointing season in which they had some pretty high expectations, and then they decided to basically sell off from there, and they were in the wilderness for those 3 years. And elected to rebuild via pitching, which is a controversial decision, even still to this day. They kind of leaned heavily into pitching. And on the other side of that, they came out of it with a bunch of really good position players and not that many pitchers, which is kind of funny.
I was going to say, Albies, Acuna, like those aren't pitchers, and they're some of the best young players in baseball.
Yeah, it worked out. It worked out well. You would obviously say because of those guys in particular, and their contracts are fantastic, all that stuff. But the stated plan when they started rebuilding was they were going to load up on pitching, and they used a lot of draft capital on it. A couple of those guys panned out. Mike Soroka, who got injured, but he's awesome. Max Fried's pretty good as well. But their hit rate's not been super high. But you know, it's kind of a normal rebuild. They were bad for 3 or 4 years. Now they're rounding into form. Not necessarily. It's kind of weird because the Braves were, my entire childhood, were really, really good and making the playoffs every year and making the World Series a lot. They've not won a playoff series in 2 decades, which is just this weird reality where they were still pretty good for a lot of this time, but they have not won a playoff series since 2001. So wow. It's just really weird. I know people don't even respond to that well. I mean, Braves fans know it, but they were good for a lot of that time. They just can't get over the hump in the postseason. So that's the short version. They rebuilt. They're pretty good now. I think they're not obviously on the same level talent-wise as like the Dodgers and the Yankees, but they're in that next tier, I think, of talented teams that can go out there and compete for the World Series.
Yeah, and you mentioned Soroka. Do you feel that that might be the difference between going to the World Series and just not having enough this year for the Braves?
It certainly could be. I mean, I did a postmortem on my podcast that night and kind of mentioned that. I don't want to go too deep into it, but it's one of those things where
does it bring up bad memories?
Is it opening a new wound? It's all right. I mean, the Braves have already been sort of decimated pitching wise before that. They signed Cole Hamels to a big 1-year balloon deal, and Cole Hamels has not pitched yet and has been hurt the entire time. They had an opt out from Felix Hernandez, who they were looking for some depth. Mike Foltynewicz kind of fell apart on them. They just kind of have a lot of pitching issues this year. That was their one big question mark. And Soroka was the number one starter. So it kind of compounded on itself when he got injured, a week and a half ago now. So, yeah, I do think that it probably, if I'm being realistic, that probably takes the Braves out of the World Series hunt just because it's a hard pill to swallow in some ways. But just realistically, I don't really see them winning, as we talked about before, 4 consecutive series when they really only have one pitcher that anyone trusts right now in Max Fried. That's a tough sell. It's not impossible. Teams have done certain things kind of like that. But, you know, they went from a team where I would have projected them probably as one of the top 6 or 7 teams in baseball. They're still going to make the playoffs, I think, because they have this nice head start and they are a good baseball team. But in a playoff series, it's hard to pick them over teams that are equally talented that just have a lot more pitching.
Yeah, definitely. And if Fried was pitching the way he has been, and then you compare him with Soroka, then maybe you do have something for the playoffs. So a 1-2 punch. But other than Fried, the rotation, at least the numbers so far, have not been good. But you know, knowing these pitchers and watching with your own eyes, sort of give a scouting report on some of those other pitchers. I think the Yankees are going to see Touchant on Wednesday, and I don't know if they've announced a starter for Thursday.
Yeah, it's kind of a mess right now in the rotation. It's going to be Tukey in the first game. It looks like he was not supposed to be in the rotation this year. That's a guy who was a highly touted prospect, has been kind of in the woods recently. He was really good in his last start, so maybe you'll see that version of him. I'm not entirely sure. He's really talented, has great stuff, but has not been a fantastic major league starter at this point in time. And then you have Kyle Wright in a sort of a similar boat, another top tier prospect, a former top 10 overall pick in the draft out of Vanderbilt. And he is another talented guy that's not been great at the major league level. And those two guys, they're now really, really hoping are going to hold up, because outside of that, you have Sean Newcomb, who has not been very good recently. He had a couple of good months previously in the rotation last year, but kind of tailed off, got removed from the rotation. Now he's back in it out of necessity, but he's been pretty bad. It's just interesting, man. There are different options. They could go to Josh Tomlin, who's been great in the bullpen, a former starter, but he's not exactly the sexiest arm in the world. They have some young guys. I think eventually they might try some of their top prospects if they get dire. But right now, it's really like they're patching this thing together with duct tape on a nightly basis, except for Max Fried.
Well, how is their bullpen?
It's very good. That's the bright side, is that the bullpen is quite good. Now, is it going to be good all year if they have to pitch six innings a night? Maybe not. That's
where I was going with this, because I saw a stat today. I think Mike Petriello tweeted it out. He does Statcast stuff.
Yeah.
And this season is the lowest amount of batters faced for starting pitchers in history. And it's been a downward trend like the last 5-6 years, but it's going to set a new low this year. So I think that's a couple of different factors. One is the fact that I think teams are worried about injuries, and we've already seen a ton of arm injuries for pitchers because of the ramp up time. So they're not going to push the starters as much, but like we've seen it for 5 years now, just bullpen is the way to go. Two times through the order for a starting pitcher, and then bring in a guy throwing 97 miles an hour.
Yeah. And I generally agree with that. I mean, especially in the postseason, I think, it's very obvious when pitchers are left in too long as starters. And in the regular season, there is definitely still some value to eating innings because you just don't want to tax your bullpen too much. But I'm generally with you. There are very few guys that you think are heavily reliable the third time through the order. And that's what you get into trouble with a lot of times
There's a handful of pitchers, I think, that you trust to go three times through the order and the bullpen arm is not better. And you can count those. You know, I think we know who they are. Gerrit Cole, Jacob deGrom, Max Scherzer when he's healthy, Justin Verlander when he's healthy. Those pitchers. It's like that sort of elite company is who you trust to go three times through.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I mean, the Braves have, I would say, 6 or 7 relievers that they really trust. And that seems like a lot because it is.
Yeah, it is a lot. Yeah.
They have a really good bullpen. I think there's probably tiers where there's maybe 4 or 5 that they really, really, really trust. And then another couple of guys who are very solid, you know, seventh inning kind of types. But again, if they're going into the bullpen in the fourth inning every night, you can't use those guys every day. And I think, especially right now this year, they've been careful, and I think rightfully so, to not tax guys. They're trying to avoid pitching guys on back-to-back days because everybody's still rounding into form. But you know, the ideal hope for the Braves, especially if they do make a playoff run or if games really matter, is that maybe you coax 4 or 5 innings, maybe out of a starter that's not Freed. And then from there, you hand it over to a bullpen that is not like dominant in the way that they don't have that number one ridiculous closer type that people always want to say that they want. But they have, again, a bunch of quality arms. They signed Will Smith to a big deal. It was kind of controversial before the season. And not that he's not good, because he's quite good. But that was their one multi-year expenditure was on a reliever, which is not normally what you want to see, but he is good. They have Mark Melanson, who's bounced around.
Is he back yet, though? Will Smith, didn't he have COVID?
He did. He actually debuted, I believe it was on Sunday. So he's been back for a couple of days now. He was on the roster a few days before that. But yeah, he had a late arrival. So along with Freddie Freeman, they had two of their top, you know, 7 or 8 guys on the whole roster get COVID early on. But yeah, Will Smith, Mark Melanson is sort of their 8th-9th inning combo in some form or fashion. They have a couple of guys who have closed before. They have Shane Green, who was an all-star closer at one point. I'm not sure he's that level, but he's good.
I remember Shane Green came from the Yankees. He went to Detroit and was really good in Detroit. The Yankees, Brian Cashman has been able to identify bullpen arms. I think that's why the Yankees have had a great bullpen over the last few years. But you've seen guys go. I mean, Melanson is actually an ex-Yankee way back. Melanson was a Yankee. So Cashman can identify the bullpen arms.
Yeah, and they've worked out. I mean, even Chris Martin was a guy that they plucked last year at the deadline. That's like their 5th reliever, but is a guy who has been very good for the last 2 or 3 seasons. So relievers are always volatile. Even the really good ones sometimes are volatile. But, you know, coming into the year, the bullpen was probably the strength of the team. That, for me, that hasn't changed at this point in time. Even with that, you know, that little star in the corner, that asterisk that, you know, bullpens, even year to year, can be a little bit tricky.
Well, that makes the series, now it's 2-game series, but 4 games total, makes it interesting, Braves-Yankees, because I think those two teams, the way you described it, are built very similar, where the Yankees rely heavily on their bullpen and their offense to win games. Maybe if things are going right for the Yankees rotation, they have a better overall staff. But the Yankees rotation has been extremely questionable so far this season, really with the exception of Cole. So that could make sort of for the classic Spider-Man meme where the two teams are just pointing at each other doing the same thing on either side.
Yeah, that might be the case. Honestly, it's just it's patchwork. And I know that was the knock on the Yankees coming into the year, other than obviously Garrett Cole was Garrett Cole. But, you know, it's interesting when you could only trust two or three guys max in your rotation and maybe not even that many. You just get into this weird territory where I feel like I'm repeating myself, but you cannot ask the same relievers to get outs every single day of the year. You have to pace these guys. And that's common sense in some respects, but no one's bullpen, not even a deep team like the Braves, no one's got 10 relievers that they trust. Like, there's always going to be a reliever or two that you don't love, and they have to pitch in some moments that actually matter.
What is the Braves bullpen strategy as far as usage? Because the Yankees, at least last year in a full season, never used a guy more than two consecutive days.
I think that's generally what they try to follow this year so far. And I'm not sure how long this is going to take, but Brian Snicker, the manager, has not used anybody even back-to-back days, I don't think, or at least maybe one or two guys total. But that was an early emphasis that they wanted to avoid using anybody even 2 days in a row. I'm sure that was just related to the weirdness of the season. But in general, they don't announce this stuff ahead of time, but you could always tell.
You can figure it out. You can figure out what the trends are. Yeah. And the Yankees never announced it. You just go through the numbers and realize it never happened.
Right. There was one earlier this year where Melanson, who, especially without Will Smith, was the closer, and the Braves did some very weird bullpen things with the lead. And it was like, after about three batters, it was like, okay, Melanson can't possibly be available here. And of course, after the game, Mark Melanson tweeted this back. No, it was just one of those things where you have to see who's available and who's not. But yeah, in general, they're pretty careful. I think early, you know, this is a long time ago now, but, you know, several years ago, they had this three-headed monster with Craig Kimbrell and Johnny Venters, and they really, really overworked those guys. And it was sort of a different regime, but still, I think they kind of learned their lessons a little bit because you just blow guys out. And, you know, that's always the risk with arms of any kind, starters or relievers. But I'd say they're fairly careful. And part of that helps, I think, is that they don't have anybody that's super dominant, but they're still top tier guys. They try to stay away from when they can.
And you mentioned sort of some of the guys that had to come back from COVID. Freeman, I know, had it early in camp, but he's played every game, I believe, right?
Yeah, there was a lot of question about him for opening day. Not that he was going to be out too much beyond that. Once they had a handle on his illness, it was pretty clear that he was going to be all right in short order. Although his was kind of scary. He actually talked about how sick he got, and it was a little bit frightening. I think at one point he had like 104 or something fever. It was not going well for Freddie, but he is someone who is like a diehard in terms of always playing. He loves to be in there. And I think even the day before opening day, there was some question, but he came out and was like, all right, I'm good to go. And I'm not sure if he should have played, but he was out there and he played. But yeah, everybody's back now, which is helpful. Will Smith, now that he's alive and back, is good. And Tukey was the other one, by the way, who's going to start against the Yankees this week. He was a guy who had COVID. He had no symptoms, but he missed a few weeks early on. So the Braves have
had a lot of people.
Yeah, I think there was four or five total. Obviously, Freeman and Smith were the two high-profile ones, and Freeman was the one that had big-time symptoms. But yeah, it wasn't like they've escaped this problem altogether, even if they've it's not hit them. I'm knocking on wood right now. It's not hit them during the season so far.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping that the Marlins and what the Cardinals did are sort of scaring teams into just staying in their hotel rooms.
Yeah, I mean, famously, the Marlins were in Atlanta for exhibition games.
Before opening day. Believe me, we've talked about the strip clubs that they visited in Atlanta.
Yeah, so, you know, stay home, everybody. That's what I would be trying to say on that one.
And Nick Markakis opted out, then opted back in. And is he one of the emotional leaders on the Braves? Kind of seems like he's been there a while and a veteran that the rest of the guys respect.
Yeah, that's certainly the case. I mean, Markakis he's kind of a controversial figure locally. I think he is someone that the local media and a large portion of the fan base holds in super high esteem, probably to the point where they overrate his actual on-field value. But part of that is that he is a great guy in the locker room and everybody loves him. And I think the Braves getting him back was a nice boon for them, honestly, because not that he's a star at this point in time. He used to be a star in Baltimore, but he's a role player, but he's someone who can help you. And they do really look up to him. He's sort of the old hand on this team. I think he's 36 now, and he is probably their number one locker room guy.
Well, yeah, they have such a young roster. Really, the core of their offense is young. And I was looking at Dansby Swanson's numbers, which I was like amazed that I remembered he was on the, in that trade, but like that trade to the Braves seems like it was so long ago and you kind of haven't heard much about him, but he's having a good year. Is this sort of his turnaround? Is this his breakout?
That's the hope, certainly. Internally, a former number one overall pick, that probably overrated him a little bit all the way through. Like, he's still a really talented guy, but you hear number one overall pick and you think, you know, absolute superstar. He's not going to be that, I don't think. But this year, he's been pretty good in the early going. He's had some injury stuff in his first couple years. He's still been perfectly fine as a starting shortstop. But the bat is not like star level, but he hits a lot of doubles, hits the ball hard. And defensively, he's pretty solid at shortstop. So just a very, very nice player. He's not on the level of Acuna or Freddie Freeman or even Albies, but someone who has started the season well, and they're hoping that continues.
And I don't know, the division is sort of shaking out really well for the Braves, because the Phillies, the Nationals, and the Mets are all underachieving. They're all under 500, and those were supposed to be the biggest competition to the Braves, and I think the Marlins will eventually fall off. So it does seem like it's the Braves' division to lose at this point.
I certainly would have felt that way pre-Soroka injury. I still feel that way, probably. It's just a little bit dicier based on all the stuff that I've already said about the pitching and how worrisome it is. But the head start definitely helps. The only team, like you mentioned, that's up there with the Braves right now is the Marlins, who no one thinks is going to continue this. I still worry a little bit about like the Nationals in particular. They're pretty talented. But given the head start the Braves have, I think you kind of have to pick them to win the division at this point in time. Maybe not like overwhelmingly, but they're still really talented top to bottom, even if the starting pitching is kind of a mess. And I just think it's so weird to me. I'm sure you've had the same problem, like just reconfiguring your brain to put more emphasis on every single game. Because, like, you know, 11-6 in a normal season is like a nice start, but no one really cares. This year, the Braves starting 11-6 is like a really big deal, because now they can kind of go 500 the rest of the way and win the division. It's pretty crazy.
Right. Yeah. There's definitely that balancing act. But then I sort of feel like a lot of that was taken out with the expanded playoffs.
True. Yeah. I mean, now the bar is even lower. It's kind of strange. And I said this on my show recently, too. I was excited for every game to mean so much.
Yeah.
And they did pull that away with the expanded playoffs. But I don't know. It's just a very strange confluence, because now 16 teams is so many teams getting in. Like, someone's going to get in with like 27 wins, and it's going to feel so
below, a couple below 500 teams are going to be in the playoffs,
and it's going to feel very strange. And yet, there's a chance one of those teams is actually good. Like, what if the Nats go 27-33 as reigning World Series champions? That's a playoff team on paper for sure. But they got off to a slow start, and if they're in it again, like, no one wants to see them in the playoffs. Like, no one.
Not with that pitching staff, especially in 3-game series. It doesn't matter if you're home or road. Like, what is really the home field advantage at this point with no fans?
Right. So that is the trouble. I think there's obviously a slight advantage, I would say, to being home for all 3 games, but not in the way that you might think. And if you're the Dodgers, for instance, as the number one overall seed in the National League, and if you draw the Nationals in round one.
Oh, that's a nightmare for Dodgers fans.
Yeah, it's just miserable. And that's just one example. But that's a team that right now maybe projects to be like a 500-ish team, even if they're more talented than that. So who knows?
You mentioned the only multi-year deal that they offered this winter was for a reliever, Will Smith. They let Josh Donaldson walk. I don't know what your opinion is of Donaldson, if you wanted them to re-sign him. But what is your take on sort of Braves management and their willingness to spend on not only their own players, which it seems like if they can lock them up to a long-term cheap deal, they're going to do it. Who wouldn't? But really in free agency, like what's sort of your take on that?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, Donaldson, they wanted him back, but given his age, they sort of drew the line in the sand. I think probably rightly so. I was a big fan of his. I think he's very good and was awesome for the Braves last year, but in his mid thirties, giving him as many years, I should say, as the Twins did was probably a bit of a risk. I still liked him, but I was okay with him letting him walk at that price. I mean, in general, I'm okay with what the Braves have done. I've criticized them in the past. They have this sort of nameless, faceless conglomerate that owns the Braves. It's Liberty Media. They don't really have that, you know, face of the team owner. And their books are a bit of a mystery. They print money, I know that much, but they don't always put it back into the Braves. This year, I was actually pleasantly surprised. Of course, this is all pre-pandemic. but they were spending considerably more than they normally spend on the Braves, and which was nice to see. So that gave me some encouragement for the future. But even then, their two, other than Will Smith, their two other big ticket items were both 1-year deals for Marcell Ozuna and Cole Hamels. That's been what they've kind of been doing. I'm not sure if that's because the GM Alex Anthopoulos could sort of sell that to ownership to try those 1-year deals instead of going long term, and that's the way that they sort of justify spending money. But they've had this weird combination of super cheap position players. And then you have Freddie Freeman as their one long-term, highly paid guy. And everything else is just kind of like, you know, mix and match year to year, which is not always ideal. But they managed to avoid the crippling long-term contract, which is what they probably wanted to do, I think.
Yeah, well, we've done preview episodes for all the teams that the Yankees are going to play this year. And I did one for the Phillies. And it's interesting how the Phillies have gone about sort of piecing their roster together. And it's a lot of good pieces on paper, but I'm just not so quite sure it fits. And then you kind of sort of contrast that with what the Braves have done. You sort of talking about these 1-year, year-to-year deals, but it just seems like the whole piece fits together much better, even though the name recognition on a lot of the players might not be there like it is on the Phillies.
Yeah, and obviously you mentioned before, but there are huge advantages when both Ronald Acuna and especially Ozzie Albies took like these comically team-friendly deals.
I don't understand. How the hell did that happen? Where was like someone to step in for those players and be like, guys, come on?
Yeah, I think the Acuna deal, that would happen first. And everyone's reaction was, look how cheap that is. But, you know, if you're trying to be as charitable as possible, he did guarantee himself like almost $100 million. And that's a lot of money. It's still a bad deal for the player, but that's a lot of money. So I understood that one more. It was still, still a bad agent job, in my opinion. But they at least they got a lot of money. And then the Albies deal came out. And yes, he's not as good as Ronald Acuna, but he's a budding, like, star-ish level player. And he took one of the more ridiculous deals I've ever seen. Honestly, I'm not trying to understand
what
that.
It is. Yeah, remind me what it is.
I think it's 7 years, and like the max is like 40-something million. I'm looking this up right now. I need to commit this to memory. But yes, it's 7 years, $35 million.
Oh my god.
And then two club options at the end. And those are pretty reasonable too. So, I mean, I'm not trying to be hyperbolic. I've never seen a worse deal for a player that was already like an established, like, high level starter. Like, again, Albies was a 4-win player last year at the age of, I think, 21 or 2. It's just crazy to me that he signed that deal. And again, I'm not trying to pile on him. It was life-changing money. And yes, there's a lot of security in that, but that was the deal that really, around the league even, like, I talked to people that just could not believe he signed that deal. It was weird.
Yeah, he's, according to Baseball Reference, which might overinflate WAR, he was a 5.2 win player last year. I mean, he's worth three times that contract.
Oh, at least. I mean, Acuna is, again, was a value, and he's guaranteed about $100 million, and he's not 2.5 times as good as Ozzie Albies.
Well, he will be a free agent, though. Even if those two club options are picked up, he'll be in his 30 year, which is not the worst thing.
Yeah, it's just the numbers. I mean, the length was perfectly fine. That's kind of a normal extension in terms of length. It was just he didn't really get any. There was no reason for him to sign an extension if that was the one that was offered.
Yeah, the Braves are not really sacrificing anything there. It's all sacrifice on the player's standpoint. So, I mean, I guess more power to the Braves. If you can get the player to agree to that, that helps you build your team immensely, because I don't think they're willing to go over the top luxury tax threshold like some other teams.
Well, right. That was the thing about this, is that I felt conflicted because, you know, a lot of Braves fans, you know, that care about the Braves and the Braves only, were kind of not mad at me, but just like, you know, why does it matter? It's a great deal for the Braves. I'm like, I'm not saying it's not. It's an incredible deal for the Braves. I'm just trying to say, like, it's not a good deal for Ozzie Albies, and you have to try to care about your player at some point. And it was just a legendarily bad deal. But anyway, it helps them.
Yeah. Do you remember Salvador Perez for the Royals signed like something crazy, like a 6-year, $7 million deal with the Royals. And then he was like the best catcher in baseball for a couple of years. And they actually redid the contract with him.
Ozzie's is so bad that maybe that's a situation where the Braves will feel bad about it. I doubt it, because the Braves are owned by, a corporate conglomerate that they don't probably care too much about. But yeah, Ozzie is on the level of a player that is so underpaid that it's going to look just silly. If he's still this player 4 or 5 years from now, it's going to look silly. It really is.
So the last thing I want to talk about, so I'll let you in a little bit on Yankees Twitter and what the one thing they bitch about constantly is John Smoltz on the broadcast whenever he does a Yankees game, because they feel like he just absolutely despises the Yankees probably from 96, 99.
Yeah.
But how old were you in those years?
I was 10 in 96 and 13 in 99. So I was, okay. I would say 96 is my worst baseball memory. So
I was going to ask you that. Yeah.
Congratulations to you.
You know, you're a couple years older than me. I was 8 in 96. And that was sort of like my indoctrination into baseball was watching the 95 into the 96 team. And yeah, absolutely. The Braves were, they should have won that World Series. They were the better team. 99, the Yankees were no question the better team.
Correct, for sure. And I'm sure you know this, but the crazy thing about 96 was that the Braves won the first two at Yankee Stadium.
Oh, yeah. Oh, believe me. I remember.
Just unbelievable stuff there. But anyway, here we are.
The Jim Larratt's home run in Atlanta is probably the moment that a lot of people just emotionally died in Atlanta.
I would be among those people. So yes, that's accurate. It's interesting to me to go back and look at that stuff, but I don't know. They're Braves fans. If anybody listens to this, the Braves fan, I'm not sure they will, but if I share it, people will be recoiling in their chairs right now.
Yeah. Well, it does sound like it's still a painful memory for you. I mean, I get it. Like 2001 still hurts me, even though the Yankees won all those championships, the way they lost it in the 9/11 year still hurts me. And then obviously losing up 3-0 to the Red Sox crushes me to this day.
Yeah. That's an all timer. So, I don't blame you. I mean, I'm now, I try to be, especially on the basketball side, but even on the Braves side, I've covered games in the press box. I try to be much, much, much more unbiased at this point in my life and not live and die on the Braves the way that I used to. And because of that, it almost hurts more from when I used to care more, if that makes sense. Like when I was more emotionally invested, now I'm a little bit cooler. Like obviously I still get bothered sometimes, but you can't replace that, that 10-year-old, like 10 to like 16 is like when you're just like living and dying. And, I can't get that one back.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I think the Braves won all those games, how many World Series did they go to? Four?
Five
World Series in the 90s, and to come away with one, I'm really not rubbing it in.
This is my life. I understand. I promise I understand. And the first two, I was very young for 91, 92. Those were kind of like, they could have won both of the series if they played well, but those were kind of like, they weren't supposed to be there. By the time they won it in 95, it was like, all right, here we go. And the 96, they were supposed to win. Anyway, it's just, yeah, going 1-for-5 was not ideal.
So the 95 championship came in a slightly shortened season, and no one sort of looks back on that. Do you think that's because it's just been time and no one remembers that, or is it because they almost, what they play, like 140 something games? So really, what's the difference between that and 162?
I think it's probably both of those things. It's been a while, and because it wasn't like completely different. I think the Braves, if they had snuck in by like a half game that year into the playoffs, maybe people would remember that more, but that wasn't the case. They were going to make the playoffs either way, and they were probably going to win the World Series either way. But yeah, it's both time and, you know, two and a half times as many games in that year than they will play this year. This year is going to be the all-timer. There's been other seasons. I think was it 81 was the reduced season, was the most reduced season. That was like,
well, that was a split season. So you had a first half winner and a second half winner.
Right. That one was more variable. And of course, the Braves had the fabled division streak that they actually were going to lose in 94. The Expos were going to win the division in 94 and they canceled the season. So the Braves.
Oh, right, right.
The Braves won the division, I think, 14 years in a row. And it was like the all time streak. And they actually would have lost it in the middle, but they got bailed out. So
I forgot about that. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, Brad, I appreciate the time. I'm looking forward to this series. Definitely, I think despite Soroka's injury, I think it's the Braves division to lose. I hope I don't jinx them. But enjoy the rest of the season. And again, thanks for the time.
Thanks so much for having me, man. Always fun talking about some baseball. And yeah, I guess best of luck / worst of luck in the series.
Yeah, I feel it.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.